I have thought about reframing myself a little bit. I mean, I'm not the same scrappy 20-year-old, you know, bright eye that, you know, just sort of fearless. But that's the word that kept boiling to the surface for me, which is this idea about being fearless in yourself.
Welcome to the Stubbornly Young podcast for people in their 50s, 60s, and beyond who want to remain engaged in the world and relevant to the younger people in their lives. I'm Dave Tabor, and that last part, staying relevant to the younger people in their lives, is why I've invited Christian Ganni to join me for episode 9. Christian's a founding partner of a marketing agency called Outerkind. He advises famous brands like McLaren North America, Jim Beam, Progressive Insurance, Caterpillar and Ford, New Belgium, and Red Bull Rampage. He helps them capture the attention of their audiences in an appealing way. You know, Stubbornly Young is about staying relevant to the younger people in our lives. And, you know, being relevant probably isn't really enough. I mean, showing relevance in an attractive way, I mean, that's almost like marketing our relevance. I don't know. Thought it would be fun to talk about that with Christian, as well as how brands are trying to market to us, the Stubbornly Young audience. Christian said he's been wondering about these things too. So, Christian, happy to have you on Stubbornly Young.
Dave, it's always a pleasure speaking with you, this topic in particularly. So thanks for having me. Really appreciate
it. It's going to be fun. I mean, you're too young to be smack in the center of this audience. And yet, when we talked about this ahead of time, like, you're already laughing, like you're thinking about it. So, you know, you've also thought about being relevant sort of as an adult, in quotes, in your world, right? The marketing world, as an experienced marketing executive who now relies on technology and media in the hands of children. I don't know. So, talk about that.
Well, I guess as I thought about this conversation with you, Dave, it sort of took me back 20 years, 25 years to where I was the young gun in the office, afraid of nothing, never really spending too much time thinking about, you know, the old guys in the office and their perhaps more stringent or programmed ways in which they operate. And here we are talking about it 20 years later, where I'm that guy, or maybe trying not to be that guy. And that's part of the conversation. To put a fine point on it, you know, this is a really interesting topic. It's one that I think relies back on some of the things that we did when we were in our sort of educated state in high school and college. And I know we're going to talk about that in a couple of minutes, but it's a really interesting state of affairs, especially the speed at which business moves these days. I'm really looking forward to digging into it with you.
Well, and you've even used the term bifurcation of talent, like the wily veteran and the young gun, you know? So yeah. Is that really an extreme bifurcation? Is that the right word?
It might not be the right word. English was never my forte, as my mom would tell me. Neither was math, which is probably why I'm a marketing executive today. That said, you know, one example I would use here is a sports reference. Those of us out there that follow the NBA, there's a player called Chris Paul, who was just recently traded to another team. And he is that wily old veteran who's been in the league 20 years. And everyone who, you know, reads the reports on his trade say, well, he's the veteran that's going to bring stability. He's going to bring experience. And there's a need for that in business, unquestionably. Those who have been through the fires before, who understand the dynamics of the business. But I also believe that there's a flip side. So that bifurcation or that opposite end of the spectrum, where it's young, unafraid, that individual I was describing earlier on in our podcast as myself, unafraid to be wrong, unafraid to try something new, unafraid to open up the aperture of educating oneself about a topic, not stuck in the old ways. And so I think just as much as it relates to sports, it relates to business in the same way. I think those need states are a nice balance, but both are necessary, unquestionably.
You know, I wonder in your perception, because you deal with marketing, we're going to talk about some of your clients in a little bit, but do you think that in an age that's been accelerated by technology, that the perceived value of wisdom is less or more?
I don't think it's less, but I also don't believe it's more. I hate to cut it right down the middle with you. I guess I'll explain. I'll speak to my business because it's what I know. I will say that over the years, everything that's old is new again. And we find ourselves oftentimes in situations trying to create something that has never existed before. And the education state of those that have been in the business for a lengthy period of time are helpful in guiding and shifting that perspective ever so slightly to either bring forward references that maybe have this has been replicated previously, or, hey, I learned this in a brief that was very similar with the brand that was challenged with this particular problem. So that historical understanding or provenance is really, really critical when it comes to developing what are new ideas. It also gives you a really solid foundation, right? It gives you a sense of comfort that someone who's been in the industry for a significant period of time actually has a thumbs up to this new breakthrough idea. It really gives you a sense of accomplishment and frankly, some confidence going into some client discussions.
Do you see that happening? I mean, if you've got clients that are all over, you know, new media, social media, new things, new tech, new this, new that, do they believe that notion that nothing is new?
There are some that do. You know, there's something in our business that is often written in briefs that says, you know, we're not looking for an idea that's been executed before. Well, I'm looking for something entirely new. And yet there are times when you present said idea and they're asking for evidence that it will be successful. Well, it's really awkward. It puts you in an awkward position to demonstrate something new that has never been tested. But that's a different topic. I think.
Yeah.
Where maybe you're going is an example I could give you is TikTok, right? For us elder statesmen, TikTok is like a vortex of people on camera doing silly things with overlays and messaging, and brands are getting into it. And recently in the past couple of years, we've seen sort of this unencumbered desire by our clients that say we have to be on TikTok. They don't necessarily understand why or want to go through the evaluation process. They just want it to be present on a new social medium. And that has repeated itself, Dave, as you can imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
Time and time again. Instagram didn't exist. That was the hot topic for a long time. So that seems to be the case.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm asking you these questions because I want to contextualize sort of where you're coming from is because I'm going to ask you more questions about branding as they pertain to me. I mean, and this audience, Outerkind, I mean, your company exists to apply human insights and challenge conventional thought about how experience between brands and people will be shaped into the future. So knowing what I'm trying to do here with Stubbornly Young, I mean, if you wanted to brand me, I mean, how would you even start the exploratory phase, that those key questions and so forth?
Well, the first thing I would do is congratulate you for wanting to put in the hard work of keeping your finger on the pulse, as it were, right? To acknowledge that in the 20, 30, 40 years that you've been in this particular business, markets have changed, business practices have changed, expectations have changed. They're different than what they were when you started. And that goes for any business. So the acknowledgement on that first piece is key. And I'll get to why in just a minute. The second would be to really maybe have an agreement or a conversation and then an agreement about your interpretation of what it really means to be stubbornly young, right? Because there's a couple different ways you could maybe unpack that. For instance, in my business, stubbornly young means you got to stay on top of culture. You got to stay on top of national and global events, brand campaigns, awards, experiential creativity, news. There is sort of this constant need for a feed of information that comes in that keeps me educated about what the market is doing. And I don't really think that's different for any business. I mean, no matter what business you're in, you're going to study the markets of what your competitors are doing or what your aspirational targets are. And then you're going to evaluate that and figure out where your gap in that marketplace might be. And so first acknowledgement, second would be like, what's the interpretation of stubbornly young? Is it more education-based? Is it more a value system? Is it more a series of principles that I live by every day? Or maybe it's a combination of all of those things. To me, it would be.
Yeah. So what's a question, if I were your client and you wanted to find out what I meant, what would you ask? Ask it.
I guess, I would say, you know, what sources of information are you using today that were different than what you were using 10, 15, 20 years ago? Have you broadened the spectrum of sources of information for your business that you're getting?
I just wrote a blog post. I've not published it yet because one of the 9 principles of being stubbornly young is consuming new content. And that's something that I really live by. And I was kind of bracketing them out and like, okay, what are they? And, you know, certainly Audible, you know, podcasts, certain docu-shows on Netflix and so forth. Then even media that is like the Wall Street Journal and NPR. One point I made, though, that I'd love your take on, like, I don't think CNN and Fox News, like, I don't think that's consuming thought-provoking content. I think that's reinforcing what we already think. And I don't think that encourages us to be stubbornly on digging in on ideas that we already think. Like, that's, to me, the antithesis.
I completely agree. And I got a piece of advice from an executive not long ago, actually, who was looking at an image of 29 business-oriented books that you could read about, you know, the new age in advertising and how to be more creative and the five principles to live by. And his perspective was, read those if you want, but maybe read some fiction. Open up your thought process to a new way of thinking and yet let your imagination run a little wild. You know, so it's not just news information, right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Information about where are you consuming it. And my guess is today, I'll but guarantee it, that today you are consuming information from a multitude, probably more new sources than old sources, if you are that interested in staying current within your business structure.
Yeah, I think that's true. And you mentioned fiction. It's so funny. I talked in episode one with a guy named Mark Schaefer, a marketing guy, but I shared with him, I'd read this fictional book called Ready Player One, and it takes place in the metaverse. And it's amazing because it was written 10 years ago, and yet it seems to be so poignant today. But the idea that I could now, through this fictional book, better understand maybe where all this is going, it was really quite fascinating that way.
It's a great book. It's a great movie, too, for those that haven't seen it.
Okay, I didn't like the movie. I didn't movie.
You didn't like it?
No, you did.
Well, I liked it. I didn't like it as much as the book, so we have that agreement.
Okay, yeah.
But education, this will be a topic that probably comes up a few times in our conversation, right? Like, where are you consuming and where are you getting this information from? Because I think that helps. I would also ask you, have you hired or consulted with any younger or more diverse audiences? And if so, what have you learned in that experiment? I'll give you an example. Can I give you an example?
Yeah.
Because I think that might help sow it, which is when my partners and I started Outerkind, we were the old guard, unquestionably. We weren't when we all started together, but we are now. And one of the pieces that we started as sort of a natural output coming out of the pandemic was, you know, work in the office, don't work in the office. We don't know what's going to happen or what type of safety precautions we need to take. So work in the office, work at home, you know, whatever suits you. And that has become, in the ad agency world, almost an essential as like a perk, right? And so we are talking to our staff about, is it helpful to work from home on Mondays and Fridays? Does that improve your, you know, sort of work spirit during the days that you're in the office? Does it help keep you productive? Now, the old guy in me would say, you are crazy. I want to walk the halls at 7:30. I want to see fingers typing. I want to see coffees in hand. But that's just not the way the world works right now. After consulting with these other audiences, we sort of understood that that is sort of a necessary component. And frankly, one that's more productive for our teams.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's a good example of actually asking younger people in your lives about what they're doing, what they're learning, and so forth. It can be a little embarrassing, although I do ask my sons, you know, and they are not like avid users of social media, which is kind of encouraging for me. But I've got attitudes here's an attitude I'm going to share with you. And I don't know if this makes me old or if it makes me wise. So I've never done this before, but you're going to answer the question, old or wise? Is social media going to go down in history as the greatest waste of human energy ever?
I mean, that is a very bold statement. I would say it has the opportunity to do so. We do a lot on social, right? Because we know that that's where people's attentions are for
it has to be.
three to five hours a day, right?
Yeah.
And so our job really isn't on the surface to go in and question and push back on the tactic, despite our personal preferences to the contrary, right?
Yeah.
All right. Our purpose and mission is to bring forward something that is usable, that is effective, that is memorable, that meets some emotional need.
This is our world, right? Yep.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to shift gears a little bit. So with clients, you often have to help them sort of reframe what they think they're selling.
Yeah.
Speaking to the stubbornly young audience, people want to remain engaged in the world, relevant to the younger people in their lives. What do you think about how we ought to be sort of reframing? Is it necessary to reframe ourselves? As the old guy in your office, are you thinking about reframing yourself at all?
I have thought about reframing myself a little bit. I mean, I'm not the same scrappy 20-year-old, you know, bright eye that, you know, just sort of fearless. But that's the word that kept boiling to the surface for me, which is this idea about being fearless in yourself, like in your emotional state, about not being afraid to ask the questions. Like you said, you know, I feel like the old guy or the dumb guy. My sons, I frankly live by a bit of a different code, in that the idea here is, if you go back again 20 years ago and you were to ask the 30 or 40 year advertising veteran, and I walked into his office or her office and I said, hey, I think I got a different way to skin this cat, I would likely get laughed out of the room for a number of different reasons, right? You don't know anything, you just got here. And frankly, much of it might've been right. Today, the code for me is a little bit different. It's about being more accepting. It's about opening up the aperture to the old saying, you can't teach the old dog new tricks. And if anything comes of this conversation between the two of us today, it would be that if you want to continue on your journey to be stubbornly young, it's that you got to be open to the new tricks. You got to open yourself up and be fearless to ask the dumb question in the room. And I don't think young people today think differently about, you know, sort of older people who have been in business. Age today is a number. I mean, people tell me all the time that the approachable environment that we curate within our space helps productivity, but also helps generate better ideas and better solutions for clients. And so I'll be the first to tell you, I want people there at 7:30. I want to be drinking coffee. I want to walk the halls. But the reality is that our business has changed. The expectations have changed. My aperture for the new trick has got to open. It just does.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it, aperture. And I remember we talked about that even before we got on this call, and I made a note to talk with you about aperture. You've already brought it up. Now, one of your active clients is Caterpillar. And when we think of Caterpillar, you know, we think of huge earth-moving machines, farm equipment, and so forth, but they want you to make them different from that, or have a different image than that, right?
Well, if you, again, go to my saying of the old dog, new trick, you know, Caterpillar's been around for 100 years, right? And if you ask 10 people, 9 out of them will say, yeah, they make these giant excavators or dump trucks and bulldozers, and they do that very well, no question. They built a really incredible business with, you know, loyal customers and family-owned operated dealer networks and a global reach. Like, they're huge. But those ships, those companies that are that sizable, those ships, they take a long time to turn in the harbor. The piece that I think Caterpillar, to their credit, acknowledged during our early conversations were, if we continue to just sell iron, our opportunity for growth will be limited. And if we keep thinking about our business the way that it has been for the last 30, 40, 50 years, sell more iron, sell more iron, sell more iron, our competitors, our digital companies, technologists will swoop in and will take over the technology aspect of construction, which is by far and away a more profitable and more necessary suite of products that people in the construction industry need. Yes, they need the bulldozer, but they also need the technologies that come with it. And so this is a long-winded way of me saying they identified an issue. They opened up their sort of creativity, if you will, on how to solve a unique problem in their business, which is like, we're only known for this. We want to become more known for tech. And they asked us to help them on that journey. And I have been suitably blown away. I mean, I've worked with big companies from General Motors and Ford. I've yet to see a brand move at this pace to embrace the change in sort of experience level within their brand. And it's a big shift for them, but they have done exactly what we talked about.
The reason I ask about Caterpillar and why I wanted you to explain that is because I do think that there are clear parallels between their brand and their conscious decision to update it and to stay updated and to get ahead of it. So I want to shift gears again, and I want to talk about a blog post that I wrote called Advertisers Don't Know Us. And I started by showing an ad, and I screamed out loud when I saw it, like, that's not me. And it was a travel company that featured, in quotes, small groups, big adventures, but the people looked like dorks. I mean, they did not look adventurous at all. And so that's just one example. It's specific. But do you think that advertisers are having trouble reaching the stubbornly young?
They are. They have a lot of trouble. And it's a complex problem, because an example in the automotive industry might be Buick or Lincoln, right? These are brands that have been around a really long time. And they've got, you know, solid brands in terms of what people think about them. But if you're a brand manager for either of those brands or those products, when you do the calculus, we've got older subsets and we have to replenish. So so to speak, the customer base, because quite frankly, they get older, they don't buy as much product, or they may frankly just pass away, and then all of a sudden we lose a customer and we don't refill the pipeline. And so it's a really tricky dance, right? Because you don't want to spend all of your marketing budget talking directly to the people who already purchase your products. Part of the growth strategy for all brands is to reach outside of those boundaries. And they struggle with that. And the visual image that you just described has occurred to me several times. I've had the distinct pleasure, if you want to call it that, of being in meetings where brands always say, hey, we're trying to get younger. Yep. Okay. And here's a placemat of the perfect person that we're trying to chase. They're 35. They have a dog. They live in this zip code. And it's a delicate dance of allocating the right budgets, but you are articulating a bit of a different subset of people, people who are indeed by age, by just the number, getting older, but in spirit are not that, which is probably why you reacted so viscerally to an image of a couple of dorks walking across a bridge.
That's exactly right. And I do think it's tricky, right? Because if you're a brand that is at its core appealing to 30 and 40 year olds, and you start appealing to somebody who's in their 50s and 60s who are active and staying engaged, are you now alienating your sweet spot?
It's really delicate, as you can imagine. I mean, there's a good example that I would give you of a brand that does the opposite, right? And there are some out there that do this. They embrace the authenticity of getting older, and they don't let creativity stunt its growth. What I mean by that is there's this company out there, not many people know who they are, but if you do, congratulations. Mm. They're called Caddis Eye Appliances. I'm a customer, so I like them, but we don't work with them. And they're a great example of what they call the anti-aging brand. That's their tag. Right? They take a remarkably honest approach on the fact that they just celebrate that their customers are 40, 50, and 60, and we love it. Embrace it. And so the visual imagery is not a couple of dorks walking across a bridge, Dave. It's, hey, you're retired, you're at the pool, and you've got your eye appliances. Even the name itself has some level of like, ooh, this is cool. It says something about me. They're slightly larger. They're very design-oriented. And so you're unafraid of just being who you are. There's a distinct difference between that and some of the brands we talked about earlier, you know, the Buicks and the Lincolns of our days today, that have to take this very delicate approach of, we want to be cool, hip, and young, but we don't want to alienate those people walking across the bridge.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm going to talk about, you wrote a blog post that I read too. You talk about Marshall Goldsmith's book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And you explain that the businesses that will see future success with the ones that are brave enough to change their habits, change their tactics, change their mindsets. You already talked about that with Caterpillar. I mean, that's a clear example. But as you think about the stubbornly young audience, is this a question of authenticity, or is it a question of like marketing ourselves?
I think it's a question of adaptability, if I'm honest, right? So we've all seen that tech curve that says, you know, how fast tech evolved, you know, in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. It was sort of a slightly upward, and then it has just absolutely hockey sticked. You know, as a native Canadian, I've got to bring hockey into this conversation. And so it skews straight upwards, right? And we talked early on about the need to be educated about these new platforms, these new technologies. It can be a bit, it can be problematic because there's just so much going on.
Yeah.
But adaptability to me is what this really is all about. It's about being open to new ideas. It's about opening that aperture. It's about being resistant to the old way of doing business and being open to the new way of doing it. And so adapting oneself to that state is almost a psychological assignment, right? Like, you have to really change who you are, not just professionally, but almost personally as well.
I would think, you know, what comes to mind, I'm listening to William Shatner's book called Go Boldly. He's really a great spokesperson for staying bold as you age and adapting. I think his key thing is learning, continuing to learn. And when you think about what you do to stay with an open aperture, what you do to adapt, what are you doing? Because you really are in a marketplace where if you don't, you just can't thrive.
Yeah. I mean, it is a significant portion of each of my days is dedicated to reading. It just has to be. And that could be fiction, like we talked about early on, just to get those creative pieces flowing, because that's my business. The second is a bit more of that business-oriented, I'll call it self-help or professional guidance, which I think is helpful with some of these new authors that are bringing forward new ideas for workplace, how to keep staff happy, how to make stakeholders and clients understand really complex digital ideas. Mm. Then I think the third thing, as we said constantly, is I am just going to be unafraid to try and fail and learn and then try and fail and learn. Maybe that's just a Christian Danny thing. I don't think it should be. I think it should be a lot of people dig into that.
I think it should be. Do you feel differently, Logan? I mean, is it different to try and fail and learn among people that are your equivalents age-wise, career-wise, and so forth, versus trying and failing and learning in front of people? That was a big thing for me. It's like, you know, I'm still making mistakes. I'm in my 50s and now 60s, and I'm still making mistakes. At some point, should that be embarrassing? But I've grown to believe that no, it shouldn't be. But maybe it's different in different contexts.
Well, I mean, I guess if you were an accountant and you made a significant number of errors, that could be problematic. Yeah. In the creative industries, in that type of work, we rely on that. I mean, we have brainstorming techniques, which is like, what's the worst idea you could possibly think of for this particular assignment? And that forces you to think outside of the box, right? You just got to think creatively, and then you reverse engineer that to try and get to the best idea.
The best one.
And like, you gotta be open to fail. There's no embarrassment from my side ever in those situations, but I can understand how there would be for some. You know, again, stubbornly young for me is not an age. We've talked 40s and 50s and 60s. I think if we're thinking about being stubbornly young, take the age number and throw it out the damn window. Don't even think about it. What you are is you are trying to create a state of mind that's right for you. That would be my advice, because that's kind of how I've lived my entire professional career, is trying to just be in the state of mind that is open to new ideas, that is open to a significant education and new learning techniques.
So as you've matured...
Well, you assume I've matured, so carry on.
To some extent, I am assuming that you have. As you've matured, does your creativity, does that look different than it did? Is it somewhat confined by sort of a box that you've learned over the years, things that work and don't work? And I mean, isn't that tough?
It's really, really hard. We used to have a sports activewear client, very tip of the spear fashion, very on the tip of the spear with sports and athletes and gear. And man, it was exhausting trying to keep up with the latest trends, both in the fashion industry and in athletic wear, and what these athletes were doing and what was cool in the music scene. I like a lot of Mozart, okay? Not a lot of people who are in their 20s buying basketball shoes really want to really understand, or they just have a different subset of musical sort of preferences. And so that, yes, can be very hard. That's just a small example of how it can be hard to stay current and stay on trend. But like anything else, if it's hard, it's probably worth doing. It still requires a significant, as I said, a significant portion of my each and every day is just reading.
Yeah. Now, as you think about this topic, as you think about your evolution as a business person and as a human, you've got kids, right? I mean, what do you hope you're conveying to them about staying engaged as you get older? Are you doing it? Are you working at it consciously?
Maybe not as consciously as I should be.
I don't know.
I think through kids learn from by example, and they obviously, like most people who have kids, everyone knows, they pay attention to more things than you think they're paying attention to. And the spirit of who you are and how you operate, both in your business world and in your sort of, you know, personal life, sometimes those can mirror each other quite closely. When we go on vacation, we don't have to make a plan every day. Sometimes we wing it and we just say, you know what, let's just go have a really good time by just letting the day come to us. And that says something about sort of who you are. Maybe you're just a little unplanned. Maybe you're just a little bit adventurous. In the professional world, I think my kids probably have embraced most that we still are very casual in terms of our appearances when we dress, you know, to go to work. It's not suit and ties like it was in the early days of the ad world back in the Mad Men days. Our creative sessions look like The Beautiful Mind with dots and squares and post-it notes. And there's a certain level of excitement and untraditionalism to that. So I think my kids will pick up a little bit on that. But the fearlessness part, we talked about that very, I said that word early on. And I think if nothing else in the ad business, if you're not fearless, you're not going to be in the ad business very long. You've got to come with an opinion. You got to come with something that's sort of got a direct attribution model to the brief that you've created with a client. And I think being fearless in those environments is an absolute essential. But I think that can translate, again, maybe not to the accountant, although in some situations, maybe.
Yeah.
But for the most part, any business, there's a certain level of fearlessness about how you operate as a person that can be really beneficial.
Well, and outside of the business world, I mean, to me, what I'm hearing, you're saying the word fearless, I'm hearing sort of this committed energy around whoever you're going to be, right?
Yeah. Remember what I said when, you know, at the very outset of this conversation, would be to congratulate you for wanting to put in the hard work, because it is going to be hard. Staying current, staying up to date, reading, being open to these new ideas. Like, it's not things that we thought we would be doing potentially maybe at this point in our careers, right? Like, we thought once you're the 50 or 60 year old executive, what you do is the right thing. What you say is the right thing. And that's just the way it's going to be. Well, that might've been the case back in the industrial age. It's not the case today.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the recurring theme is, as I think about all of these topics, as I wrote my 9 rules for being stubbornly young. And I mean, it's, it takes some conscious decision, some conscious effort, right? And you mentioned it earlier, mindset. So yeah, let's wrap up on that.
Yeah, I think that would be my one piece of advice, is that it's hard work, but be committed. You'll get a more surprising reaction than you think from those that are in your business or professional circle by being a little bit more committed, by being a little bit more fearless. I think you'll be surprised pleasantly by the result.
Let's wrap up. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. Today on the Stubbornly Young podcast, you've been listening to my conversation with Christian Ganni of Outer Kind. Christian, thank you for joining me. And also this, I made several notes about things like aperture, mindset, fearlessness. I mean, these are all things that I think are consistent with where we're going.
I look forward to our conversations all the time. This one's no different. So thanks for having me.
Yeah. Listeners, this has been episode 9 of the Stubbornly Young podcast for those in their 50s, 60s, and beyond, remaining engaged in the world and relevant to the younger people in their lives. Please do me a favor, help the podcast spread by submitting a review and by sharing. Catch you next time on Stubbornly Young.